Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Good Tuesday, everybody. Welcome in. Darren Donican, Chase, ESPN 102.5, the game streaming on the Game Nashville app. Chase McCabe, Darren McFarland will be along in just a second. Willie Donick getting ready for today's coverage of the Predators and the Coyotes. Game number 2 pregame coverage gets underway here on ESPN 102.5, the game at 12:30. The puck drop just after 1:30 live from Edmonton, the bubble that we have seen over the last several days. Hope you're all having a great start to your day. And we know that this is going to be a big one for the Predators as they try and even up this series. We'll get more on the Arizona perspective from Craig Morgan. He will join us in a little bit. AZCoyoteInsider.com. Greg McElroy from the SEC Network and ESPN. We'll talk some college football with him. The Big 12 making some news. And Pierre McGuire, NBC Sports, one of our favorites. He'll join us at high noon as we get you set for that matchup between Arizona and Nashville. Elijah Campbell is back at the Wholesale Inc. Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Elijah, how you doing?
We're doing. Yeah, not too bad. And Preds game day. I'm excited.
I know.
Shorter show, but excited to watch more sports. Had a nice sensory overload from this weekend and yesterday as well. So I'm excited to keep that going.
Yeah, I mean, I know you've really been into the NBA and watching that. I've been, you know, dabbling in the NBA. I've been watching baseball. Bad news for my Braves that we'll get to in a second.
Oh, that's tragic.
Oh,
that's awful.
Yeah. But been watching that, and of course, all the hockey games going on as well. But yeah, the Braves. You know, I had just turned it on, and I know Darren's here, but I just turned it on as Soroka had gotten hurt, and now it has come out. He's out for the season, torn Achilles. The Braves already had pitching struggles with their rotation, and now their ace is out for the year. So I had a little mourning last night, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's a tough loss right there. The pitching staff was already a little thin.
Yeah, I mean, that's the problem. They have one pitcher now. They have Max Fried. I mean, Kyle Wright is, I just don't think he's there quite yet. I mean, he's not giving them 5 innings. They've had to pull him a couple of times now and just trying to piece together a rotation. I mean, that's going to be what's going to bite the Braves if they can't figure that out. D-Mac, what's up?
Just reading Tom Pelissero's tweet. It looks like NFL teams are about to get some relief in their cap space, which makes things even more interesting on the Titans front. It looks like the management council has informed clubs that signing bonus proration, those salaries and bonuses will be not just the unearned salary and bonuses, that will be removed from the 2020 cap immediately upon notification a player is opting out. So doesn't really affect the Titans right now when it comes to that, but there is going to be salary cap relief. I mean, who does that favor right now, at least first glance? The Patriots, since they've lost half their roster, yeah, opting out.
Yeah,
so
I mean,
it looks like they'll be able to reload. I don't know with whom, although there are a lot of still big names sitting out there. You do wonder, why are those big names still sitting out there? But does Logan Ryan go back to New England? You know, does that happen? I don't know. They got who else? Who are others? Let's see, Devontae Freeman is out there.
Yep. You got him out there.
I mean, Clowney, we know. I don't know if the Patriots.
Who's
are going
the guy?
That
I'm
out.
I'm blanking on his name. He was with the Giants. He's a. I think he was with the Giants. Yeah. He's a pass rusher. I'll think of it in a second. But there are some names that are out there that certainly could help any team, but the Patriots are going to be looking for. You know, now it kind of makes sense for Clowney because all this is happening. And clearly he would not have been able to predict exactly how this was going to go. But, you know, there's not a – I know the deadline, I guess, is now the end of the week. for players opting out, and that list continues to grow. I mean, I would say of any of the major sports, the NFL definitely has the largest number of players that are opting out for the season. There's a deal in place where I think they get $150,000. You just mentioned all the breaks that they're going to get on the salary cap, teams are going to get. So now Jadeveon Clowney, he can just sit there and lick his chops because the ball's in his court. I mean, he's got leverage because there are going to be some teams that are now desperate for his services, and he's going to be able to look, or his agent's going to be able to look and say, okay, well, you're getting some breaks from the salary cap standpoint. You got the room. Let's make this happen. And now it makes sense to me even more. Sign that 1-year deal, but get as much money as you can out of that 1 year, and then go see what next offseason brings.
Yep. It is interesting to see how this will play out. I also was reading where Vandy's kicker, I guess, has opted out. He has informed the coaching staff that and his teammates that he is going to opt out for this upcoming 2020 season. The college football scene, as you said, we will talk to Greg McElroy at 11 o'clock to start the second hour. I don't have any clue what this college football season is going to look like. I mean,
do you think anyone really does, if you're being honest?
I mean, I just saw where – did you see where Minnesota, Mr. Row Your Boat coach, he's lost his two top receivers, and one of them is projected to be first-round pick. They both have just opted out and said, yeah, I'm just going to concentrate on the draft. I mean, that's going on all over the place. You had this incident at TCU. Where's that going with them? You've got the Pac-12 – the whole conference, the concerns with the players there. I mean, it's just a weird, weird time. We know it's a weird year, and this is just adding to the list. I don't know what page we're on now of weirdness in 2020, but I don't know where this is going in college football. I suspect it's going to be incredibly difficult to pull this off. You're asking to trust kids 18 to 22, and if you've listened to the show, you've heard me say, in my opinion, from my observation, from the people I've seen and people I've been around, people in that demo, 18 to 22, they don't give a rat's you know what about any of this. They don't even care.
Nope.
That, and I'm not blanking it. I'm not casting a net over everybody. I'm just telling you that's the feeling I get. You see enough video. You see enough stories on television. You've already had this Rutgers story. Wasn't that because of parties?
Yep. And they're what? They're, I mean, it's almost half now, half the team.
I mean, if you're still having big – by the way, this is happening in Nashville. We just saw it on the news. It's happening in Nashville. Big parties this weekend, hundreds of people. I mean, if you're doing that, you are aware. You're not living under a rock. You just don't care, right? You just obviously don't care, and it doesn't mean anything to you. And that's fine. I mean, that's your prerogative. That's your right. Those are your shoes you walk in. But I guess getting back to my original point, how is college football going to pull this off if a lot of the mindset with people that age are, man, I'm just going to live my life. I'm not worried about all this other stuff. You guys want to do all this stuff and social distance and wear a mask and do all this stuff? You guys go ahead. I'm not doing it. And if that's their mentality, and if they're still going to just, you know, have big college parties like we both experienced, well, good luck with college football this season.
Yeah, it's not going to happen. But here's the problem. So think about this for a second. And you're a parent, so I'm sure you've had these types of arguments with your son before, of that they get a kid, because I say this because I've been guilty of it when I was younger. You get one example that goes in your favor, meaning the kid. One example, and so this is the example I'll use. You know, it comes out that Bristol Motor Speedway has 20-plus thousand fans, and they cannot trace any coronavirus locally, any cases to that race. So I call it, let's just say a kid at the University of Tennessee can say, well, hey, you know, that's 20,000 people. If I go to a party, I mean, come on, like, we're all being, you know, we'll be safe. We'll do what we're supposed to do. Yeah. And that's the argument they use. We know that it's a phony argument because they're not going to be safe. They're going to all be, you know, piled up together. You're going to have 100 people in a room or whatever. They're not wearing masks. But that's now what they're going to try and do, because they just don't care. Like you just said, they look at it as, okay, whatever, I'm invincible. Because that's what a college kid always thinks. That's what I thought. I thought, oh, I'm invincible. Nothing's going to happen to me. And we know that that's not the case. So you're right. And it's going to hurt college. Not only is it going to hurt college football, but as we've been talking about on this show since March, it's going to hurt athletics.
You're now,
in general.
It's just the whole mass thing. If you are against something, but what about all the other people that you affect? So you literally don't care about the human race. Like, you don't care about anything. You're surrounded. You don't care about anything around you. Because that's what I would like to say to those people, that, you know, until they were mandated and they were forced to, people said, I don't have to wear, I'm not wearing a mask in a store. Oh, so, okay, that's fine. You don't want to. So you also don't care about anybody around you. So you don't care about anybody in this place around them. So you only care about yourself. And that's what your point is. There is a huge ripple effect. If you don't care, that's fine. But what about all the people you are affecting? Because we've talked about it. They don't figure out a way to get this college football season in. If they don't figure out a way to get this college basketball season in, college sports does not exist. It goes away.
Right.
So we no longer talk about college sports. So how's that going to work out?
And it's already going to take a hit.
Is that going to be okay then? You okay? Is that good? Everybody good with that? Like, no college sports. It will go away. Like, they will close up shop. That's how this works. So, I mean, think about, you know, your fellow people around you, you know, people at the same school as you, people that you want to go to that party with. Well, guess what? You may affect their life. All of you need to think about that, because you're probably hanging out with a lot of other student athletes if you're a student athlete. And you know what? You guys may not have sports to talk about at your school anymore, because it'll all go away if they don't figure out a way for this to happen this season. It's all going to go away. Poof. Goodbye. See you later. That's how it works. They're going to board it up and say, nothing to see here. College athletics doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah. And you know what else? This is the other part of this. And I'm 33 years old, and this is something that I've learned through all of this. Because, you know, people have private lives. They don't want to, you know, I know that we live in a social media world where some people think that they got to put everything on social media and everybody's got to know everything about everybody. But that's not the truth. And what I'm learning is, you know, there are a lot of people that I've known for years that they have conditions that they just don't talk about. And it's like, no, hey, I can't get this thing, because if I get this thing, it's really going to mess me up or mess my dad up. And so to me, I'm like, huh, okay, well, I'm glad to know that. And I keep that in mind. And even though I'm good and my immediate family is good, you got to be careful. And I say good. I mean, my parents are both in their 60s, so I'm definitely cognizant of it and try and, you know, try and be careful. And so I think that's the responsible way to look at it, of, okay, if me putting on a mask whenever I'm in public, if I go into a restaurant and I sit down, then I take it off to eat or whatever, if that's going to keep people that I've known for years safe, then okay, I'm going to do that. And that's where we got to get better. Think about others and not just yourself.
We'll come back, talk with Craig Morgan, talk about the opponent of the Predators. Game two today, 1:30 puck drop. You'll hear Pete Weber and Hal Gill on the call today. I'll have pregame for you at 12:30. We'll see if the Predators can even up this 5-game series at 1 after today's action. But we'll learn more about the Coyotes on the other side with Craig Morgan. He covers them. We'll do that next on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Game two today, Predators and Coyotes. We've got half of a show, or a little bit over half of a show. Our show will lead into pregame. I'll have pregame for you at 12:30 today. And then a 1:30 puck drop for game two. Predators looking to even up this series. You'll have Pete Weber and Hal Gill on the call coming up at 1:30. Let's bring in Craig Morgan. He covers the Coyotes out in Arizona, azcoyotesinsider.com. Craig, how you doing?
He's not there yet. They're efforting back at the studio.
Okay. Guess we'll just stall then.
Yeah. We're in a four-corner stall. As somebody you know used to say, So there you go.
Pierre LeBrun will be on the show at noon today. So a little bit of everything. Pierre McGuire, not Pierre LeBrun.
Yeah, Pierre McGuire.
Hockey
who's
guy.
In the bubble?
Hockey guy, different hockey guy.
I heard. I listened to him last night because I was watching Chicago and Edmonton in Game 2. That was the late game last night. And Edmonton looked like a different Oilers club than we saw a couple days ago.
Well, I mean, I gave you the stat at the end of the show.
Sure.
Yesterday. And I know this is different. It is. Because there's not travel. There's not fans in the stands. That was a different era of hockey. So I get all that. And that's perfectly fine because it's all true. It's not the same as before. But, I mean, in a five-game series, when there used to be five-game series, an 0-2 hole is not where you want to be because history in this game has shown you you don't dig out of that hole. That hole does you in. And only one time has it ever happened. The Islanders were the only team in 1985 to dig out of that hole over the Capitals and actually come back and win a five-game series when falling behind 0-2. So it's happened 56 times, and the teams that were 0-2, their record is 1-55. So, you know, everybody knows it. All these teams, the surprise losses, you saw the bounce back yesterday. Edmonton falls. They get pushed around by Chicago. Chicago dominated that. Then Edmonton comes back, and their stars shine. Well, at least their big star, Connor McDavid, who had a hat trick, his first career playoff hat trick. The Penguins responded after they were surprised in overtime. After they had 96 shot attempts on Montreal in Game 1, they came back and took Game 2. I mean, it's no secret to it. The Rangers were the only one. Winnipeg responded, even with no Scheifele and no Laine, and they get Game 2. You can't lose. You can't go down 0-2, and these teams know it. The Rangers didn't get that memo because they're now down 0-2, and I think they're done. They're just going to go on and get swept. I think we've now got Craig
Morgan.
You
wanted to change your pick yesterday.
Oh, I wanted to change it before puck drop. At least I was on record saying it before puck drop that the Rangers, I watched Game 1, I was like, they're going to lose this series. They're not the better team. Carolina is, and it played out again yesterday. And like I said, I think now it's absolutely going to be a clean sweep. Carolina is just way better than New York. Let's bring in Craig Morgan. Let's talk about today's Game 2. He covers the Coyotes for azcoyotesinsider.com. Craig, how you doing?
I'm confused. I guess we don't have him.
So I was watching that game yesterday, too. There was a couple round-robin games. Vegas beat Dallas and Tampa. And that was a crazy game. Tampa jumped out to a 2-0 lead, and then Washington came back, tied it up. Washington had a golden opportunity to win it late, but the Lightning get it done in a shootout, so they win that round-robin game. Vegas... Dallas is reeling. Dallas is in trouble. That's a team you need to pay close attention to because they did not go into the pause the way you want to go in. We know the Predators shut them out twice right before the pause. I think they lost their last six going into the break. They've come out. They've been shut out in an exhibition game against the Predators, and now they lose to Vegas. I know it's a round-robin game, but they look like something's off.
Yeah, I know they do, and that's a problem for them. I mean, Ryan. So I did Preds Insiders last night with Ryan, and Ryan has already started the okay. If this happens with the with this series, and if this happens with that series, this is who the Preds would play, and trying to pick opponents. I'm nowhere near doing that, but if there were to be a rematch with Dallas, just the way that Nashville has played against Dallas as of late, I would certainly take that. And now I do believe we have Craig Morgan.
If we don't, this is the last time I'm saying it. So you can do the intros because I'm not doing it again. Craig, are you there with us?
I'm here. What's up?
All right. How you doing?
I'm hanging in there.
Yeah. What was your reaction to Game 1? I want to get the other side. Obviously, here, disappointment in this market. But on your side, is that what you expected? I mean, I think we talked about it. Well, actually, when we talked to you the first go-around we were at Bridgestone Arena, that was before the exhibition game. We watched the game against Vegas, and I get it. It was a showcase game. Didn't count. Arizona didn't look exactly inspired, or Vegas looked like the more inspired team Wasn't impressed, but, you know, it didn't mean anything. So what was your reaction after game one?
Well, I thought that the Coyotes accomplished a lot of things that they wanted to accomplish. They had talked about Nashville's blue line being, you know, they have immense respect for that blue line. It's obviously incredibly skilled, particularly the top three. And for a while, you could certainly make a strong argument. I think you still can, that it's one of it's the best blue line in the NHL, or still one of the best. But having said that, the Coyotes did not think that the Nashville blue line was overly physical, and they thought that afforded them some opportunities to get to middle ice in the offensive zone. And you saw that. They got a lot of shots from the slot in that game. They scored a couple goals from that area, so I thought that was a big key for them in that game. I thought they handled Nashville's cycle pretty well in that game, getting out of their zone better than they had really over the last couple months of the season when they were slumping. And then they got contributions from, you know, their biggest stars pretty much across the board. Oliver Ekman-Larsson was fantastic in that game. They got goal from Clayton Keller. They got big performances from Taylor Hall and Phil Kessel. So a lot of good things to feel good about for the Coyotes after game one.
Yeah, and I don't know, typically you would know this, what Rick Tocchet does with their minutes, but they didn't have to chew up a ton of minutes either. I think Ekman-Larsson and Goligoski were the only two over 20 minutes, if memory serves me correct. So they didn't have to chew up a lot of minutes in that victory.
Yeah, and that's part of the strength of this blue line, is they have some depth. Really, at least they at least go five deep, where you have faith in the veterans that can play the minutes, so they can distribute them. And that's obviously going to help you both, you know, if you have a grueling game or in a long series, it's going to help. We often see defensemen log heavy minutes in the postseason, and nobody really had to play that much, so that should help the Coyotes as well.
Nick Schmaltz got hit by Reeves in that showcase game against Vegas. He did not play. We were wondering if he was going to play. What does he mean to this Coyotes roster, and do you have any idea what his status is for today?
I don't know his status quite yet. I should know that soon. In terms of what he means, I mean, when he's on his game, he can bring speed through the middle of the ice. That's really one of the biggest reasons they wanted him. It's no secret that the Coyotes are a bit lacking at the center position. They don't have a lot of offense generated through the middle of the ice, which I think is probably the biggest weakness of this club. When he's on his game, Nick can bring that. He still has some work to do down low in his own zone, and that's part of the reason you saw him move to the wing at times this season. But, you know, after a strong start, Nick wasn't playing all that well late in the season. So it would be nice, obviously, for them to get him back and get the guy that they saw earlier in the season. But I'm not sure what's going to happen yet. I would expect to find out fairly soon whether Nick Schmaltz is going to be in or not.
What did you make of the shorthanded play by Michael Grabner, a guy that's no stranger to shorthanded goals? But, you know, we talked about it in post-game and on yesterday's show. Kind of just felt like that was the backbreaker for the Predators. They had the man advantage. They were trying to cut the lead down to a one-goal game late in the second period. And an errant pass from Philip Forsberg right to Grabner creates the breakaway. And like I said, he's no stranger to that play.
No, not at all. I've seen that play a million times with Michael Grabner. You know, he had the eye injury, of course, about 20 months ago, and that impacted his game quite a bit. His vision is altered for good. If you look at one of his pupils, it's still dilated more than the other, and it's an adjustment. Your vision is different in one eye versus the other, and it's never going to change. But what I've seen from him over the years, I don't know that I've seen a better penalty killer in my time covering the NHL. His anticipation is remarkable. He plays with a longer stick than most guys, so he can get it in passing lanes and pick off passes. And then when he gets the puck, forget about it. Nobody is catching that guy. He is as fast a skater as I have seen. Maybe Connor McDavid could catch him. He is just ridiculous. So he creates those opportunities all the time. And, you know, with all that he had been through with the eye injury, with the healthy scratches this season as he was trying to adjust to that vision and trying to, you know, I think bring his defensive game up another notch, he didn't even know if he was going to play in this postseason. He had considered not coming back for the return to play format, but he did. He didn't know if he was going to play until the night before game one. And then he comes out and scores, like you said, I thought a huge goal, the backbreaking goal, and a goal that the Coyotes just hadn't been able to get for much of those 2 months when they were slumping, the goal that really pushes the game along.
How do you think, and this is another weird situation, one, it's a five-game series. We haven't seen five-game series in the league since the 80s. And now we're talking about back-to-backs, and I realize there's no travel. But, you know, today and tomorrow you're going to get back-to-back postseason games, and that's typically we don't see that as well. How do you think the Coyotes will play their goalie situation? Well, we know Kemper went in game one. I anticipate, unless you tell me otherwise, that Kemper is going game two. But with Raanta and Kemper, how do you think they'll play? Are they just going to ride Kemper in this series? How do you think the goalie situation will play out?
I don't know yet. And I got a sense early, before the series even started, from Rick Tocchet that he wanted to use both goalies, because coming into this, he felt like it was the start of a new season. And you just don't see coaches ride their number one guy right out of the gate because they're not ready. They're not in a rhythm. You risk either fatiguing them or maybe even injuring them. And I thought that was going to be the way it played out. But Darcy Kemper definitely is playing today. And there's no plan beyond that. So we'll have to see what happens. I've been watching really all the teams with fascination to see how they're managing this. I think Winnipeg and Calgary, coming back on the second end of a back-to-back, are both going to go back to Hellebuyck and Talbot, which is interesting to me in its own right. I don't know that goalies can handle this, but I guess maybe we make too much of it. It's a fascinating thing to think about, not only in the short term, but what about the teams that advance if you ride your number one guy in this condensed schedule? What is his rest level and preparedness level when he moves on to the next series?
Yeah, I remember asking you about Connor Garland, just bursting on the scene, leading Arizona in goals, going into the pause and coming out of this. Didn't really notice him much on Sunday afternoon. What did you make of Garland's play?
No, I agree with you. I don't think he had much of an impact on the game, and his minutes were down. So I don't know that the coaching staff was all that happy with his play either, but I have seen Connor Garland bounce back from these off performances, which have been pretty rare this season. I've seen him bounce back from them several times, so we'll see. You know, it's his first taste of postseason hockey. Maybe that was an adjustment for him as well. And he was, you know, working his way back from that knee injury as well. So we'll see how he goes as the series progresses.
Craig Morgan is with us, azcoyotesinsider.com, covering the Arizona Coyotes. And when I talked to you on Sunday and I brought up Phil Kessel, and would we see good Phil Kessel in this series? Two assists in game one. He was very noticeable. How now? What is the trick to keeping him consistent for the Arizona Coyotes after a pretty good game one performance?
Well, maybe it's just getting Phil Kessel into the postseason, where he has been a remarkable performer over the course of his career. The thing that jumped out at me with Phil in that game is he had his speed back, and he had told us, you know, he dealt with injuries all season, and maybe that's true now, because watching Phil, he definitely looked like a different player on the ice. He was dangerous, and we didn't see that a lot during the season. You know, the two assists obviously helped, but he was shooting the puck as well. I think he tied for the team lead in shots on goal. So those are good signs for Phil Kessel, because they clearly need him to perform in this series if they're going to win.
We talked about the shorthanded goal from Grabner earlier, but overall, four special teams goals. I mean, they are not shy on calling penalties, and we've seen that in other games. Did that surprise you a little bit, or do you just equate that it's sloppy hockey, these guys haven't played in 4 months, and that's just the result of it?
Well, that's been the take from the people that I've talked to anyway, that this just is somewhat like preseason hockey, when you will see a lot of penalties called because the players are a little bit sloppy. I don't know. I wonder, too, if the officials are sort of setting a tone here early in these series for, you know, trying to get things under control. I don't know what is playing into that, but I've heard a couple of different opinions. It is interesting, though, and it certainly changes the game when it's just a battle of special teams. That's not really something that I hope to see over the course of the playoffs. I hope this doesn't continue.
We don't obviously talk about this team on a daily basis. We don't cover them like you do. So, you know, we've addressed things with the Predators and the inconsistencies on their end. But when you see them play the way they did on Sunday, back that up with a win, how does this team respond to a win like that? Are they pretty good at bouncing back, or is this where their maturity is, they're working on their maturity of being able to answer that call in game two?
You're talking about the Coyotes?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good question, because it was something central on the minds of the coaching staff. I think they have a lot of veterans who have been through this before, and they're they're going to be preaching to the younger core, and there's a significant younger core on this team that hasn't been through this before. One of the things I've always heard from coaches is it's harder to sustain success than it is to achieve it, and I think that's a lesson that maybe young players need to learn. It's particularly harder in the postseason. I'm really interested to see how they respond today. You've seen what's happened around the league with a bunch of teams that took a 1-0 lead, and by and large, every other team has evened up the series, except for, I believe, one series. So, you have a chance to put a stranglehold on a series. You hope that for the players' sake, at least, you hope within that locker room that they understand that.
So that leads me into a bigger picture question. I had this conversation on the air with somebody yesterday of, you know, I look at Arizona and I like the makeup of the team. I think that they're not there yet, meaning, you know, winning Stanley Cups and making it that far. Anything can happen in the playoffs, obviously. But I feel like they're maybe a year off and they're that close, and they remind me somewhat of a Colorado team from a couple years ago. So where do you think they are in a big picture sense, not just this series?
Well, so much depends on their younger core. You know, guys like Clayton Keller, who signed that big contract, Nick Schmaltz, Jacob Chychrun, and of course you still have Oliver anchoring things back there. They all have to take a step forward, at least the young guys do. They have to take a step forward in their development. But in terms of the Coyotes being a cup contender, I just don't see that, because I don't think they have the piece at the top of the lineup, that number one center. They have had horribly bad luck in the draft lotteries. They've never been able to get up into the top picks to land one of those franchise players that a lot of other teams have managed to do simply by being in the number one or number two pick. The Coyotes just haven't been there. So that to me is a glaring weakness in this lineup. I don't know how they manage it. You try, I guess, I think you try to have depth at the center position, which is what they've tried to do, but I still think they're lacking that one piece. I think it's really tough to win a cup without that piece.
It'll be interesting to see how today plays out, Craig. Appreciate the visit, as always. Enjoy the game, and we'll talk soon.
All right, guys. Take care.
Craig Morgan covers the Coyotes. AZCoyotesInsider.com. And today, indeed, it will be game two. Will the Predators be able to respond and even this series up at one? And then they'll go right back at it again tomorrow. Game three tomorrow. Same time, same channel. Tomorrow, and we'll see how all this plays out. It would be very interesting to see what our discussion piece is on Thursday's show of Darren Donick and Chase. We'll come back, wrap up the first hour next on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Appreciate Craig Morgan for joining us. He covers the Coyotes. Game two today, 12:30 pregame, 1:30 puck drop. Predators down 0-1 in that series. The Minnesota Gophers wide receiver that I brought up earlier, Rashad Bateman is his name, and he has told PJ Fleck that he will not be rowing the boat with them this year. He is opting out, and he will declare for the draft, and he is projected to be a first-round pick. That is a big loss for Minnesota. Big loss. And we already saw it happen with Virginia Tech last week, when they lost Farley, their top cornerback, who's also projected to be a first-round pick. You do wonder if all these guys who are projected to go very high in the NFL draft will just say, the heck with this season. I'm not even fooling with this. I'm just going to worry about my pro career.
Well, wouldn't you? We've talked about – I mean, we've had this conversation since March that this could happen.
Yeah.
Because why would you – I mean, we know that your career, or in these young men's careers, it's an investment. And if they already know they're going to be a first-round pick, they know the kind of money they're going to make. And if they risk getting this and having, you know, long-term complications from it, or the usual of just getting hurt, I mean, that's going to hurt their investment. So – I with all the unknowns of whether they're going to play and what the schedule's going to look like, I mean, Big 12 doing the, you know, 9+1 and all of that, then I don't blame them. It sucks, but it is also an understandable decision for them to make.
Yep. We'll get into all that and more with Greg McElroy coming up to start the second hour of the program. I was kind of laughing during the break at GPander78. He tweeted at us and said, game day fist bumps for everyone. And if you don't know the history with Greg, he goes to season ticket holder, goes to a lot of Predators games, and it's kind of routine or ritual for him to come through Barrel House, hang out with us for a bit, and then before he goes to his seat, come up and give us a fist bump, you know, for good luck. And he said, this shows why I missed the pregame show at Barrel House. And he's got a split screen of me talking to this out-of-town fan and the look of you next to me on the other screen. And it says, Chase has the look of Darren is about to verbally break his local yokel foot off this dude, off in this dude's beep. Now, I'm going to test your memory.
I remember.
Do you remember this?
Do you remember this
game?
This was earlier this year, right?
Yeah. Who was my guest in Barrel House? This is what started this whole conversation. Who was my guest? This is why this guy was yapping.
Because they're playing Toronto, I think.
Yes, that's exactly right. You're blazing hot. Who was my guest in person? In a very crowded Barrel House.
Bettman. It was Gary Bettman.
A very crowded Barrel House.
Yeah, it was Gary Bettman.
NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman.
That's right. Because that was one of those, I didn't even know about it. It was a last minute type thing, and I walk into Barrel House, you know, for those of you that don't care, we all have our game day routines, and we've done it for so long that usually I show up at the same time, Darren gets there at the same time, and a lot of times when I actually walk into Barrel House, the pregame show has already started, sometimes a little bit before, and I walked in right as things had gotten underway, and I look at the desk, and I go, that's Gary Bettman. That's the NHL commissioner.
Yeah.
Like, what's he doing here? And Ryan was in there too. And I looked at Ryan and I said, we have Bettman? He goes, yeah. Yeah, we have Bettman. So I do remember that now. And that look is priceless. It's perfect because I looked at you because I could see the steam coming off your head because this guy was being a jerk. I mean, he was, I think he had already had a couple. And so
yes, that was very clear.
And so he was just.
Do you remember his whole what he was barking about?
That I don't. I know it was something towards the commissioner.
It was directed at me and the commissioner. Like basically, he wanted me to pounce on Gary Bettman and wanted to know why I didn't tear him apart for player safety and this and that, and just was going on and on. And there's no doubt he was feeling good. He wasn't feeling any pain, and he just would not stop yapping. This was after Gary Bettman left, so this was after the interview. So Pete and Hal, for people listening, they have no idea of the reference that we're talking about. So after the segment that I did with Gary Bettman, then Pete and Hal during Keys to the Game, and then after Morning Skate, I had taped an interview with a player. So we play that interview. So there's this gap where I don't have to do anything there to Barrel House. So I could literally sit there and talk to fans, which we do all the time because, like I said, we're running other things. Pete and Hal are doing Keys to the Game. I'm not involved in that segment. And the interview, it was from that morning after Skate. And so this guy just goes on. Obviously, if we were doing live stuff, I wouldn't have been able to have this conversation. But he was from Toronto, and I know. Honk if you've heard this before. A Canadian who doesn't like Gary Bettman.
Never met any of those.
Yeah, well, honking. We just went deaf from all the honking. And they were playing Toronto, yet he was wearing a Sidney Crosby jersey. He was wearing a Crosby jersey. He's from Toronto, and he was barking about Bettman. And it got so bad because this guy just would not stop. The Barrel House, I didn't really have to do much because Barrel House turned on him.
Oh, yeah. Well,
and I think Greg was like right in the middle of all of that. I think where he was sitting in Barrel. And I remember Kathy was in there. There was a bunch. And this by the end, people were like, get out of here. Barrel House, the patrons in Barrel House were like kicking this guy out. Like, get out of here. We don't want you in here anymore.
And
we've
I've
heard
learned,
enough.
You know, the baby bird has learned over the years of when Papa Bird gets angry, you just need to kind of step out of the way and let him handle his thing. And that's what I was doing. But the look on my face was, where is this going? Because we had the ropes up, but if this guy goes under the rope and charges the desk, Like, am I going to have to go into constable mode? Like, what's and I knew there was backup there. There was definitely backup because I think Ryan might have still been in there. I can't because he was witnessing this. I believe Marshall was there. So it's just like, okay, this guy's running his mouth. He's had a good amount to drink on Broadway already, and he's just blabbing and blabbing and blabbing about nothing. And I don't remember exactly what he was saying because it was just it was pointless. It was all about nothing. But
he the guy who also told me that he had been a Vegas fan for 15 years?
Yes. It was
that was the same guy, right?
Right, yeah, it was that guy.
I said, really? So you've been a Golden Knights fan for 15 years?
He's like, yes.
Interesting.
Right.
It's people like that, whenever there's – you just let them go because, you know, you don't need to do anything. They will take care of themselves. Just let them talk. And the more he talked, the bigger the hole got for him. And like I said, by the end, everybody was just over him. It was funny. And by the way, that does not happen to Barrel. That was such a weird – I mean, Barrel House is fun and everybody's – even when, the other fans are in there, it's always – you know, it's a good place to hang out before the game, all the televisions, and stuff like that just doesn't happen. But that night was a crazy night. I was like, if this is the prelude of things to come, yikes. Luckily, I don't think we saw him again.
No, and you're right. It doesn't happen. It's every now and then, and it's usually – there's one common denominator. They've had a little too much. So it's happened a couple of times that – you know, I've had to step up and go and take somebody back from the desk. That's actually why we have the ropes now, because that did happen, that somebody had too much to drink and they were trying to get on the show. So that's what it was. And I think that was when you were out, actually. So I think this happened to Ryan, and somebody was trying to yell into the mics. We had to step in and get them out of there. And so then we got ropes, but it happens. It's live radio, but kudos to Greg for sending that picture because the look of my face says it all. Because in my head, I'm going, "What the hell is about to happen? Do I need to call security? Am I going to have to jump across this desk? Who am I going to hold back first, Darren or this idiot?" Like, there was so much going through my head.
That was an interesting night. So let's see who can respond. So Willie made the bold prediction yesterday that he knew that three teams that had lost game one were going to go on and win the series. Three, which the percentages are what? Isn't it like 83% the 0-1 hole in a five-game series, I believe?
Yeah.
80, 0-1. I thought it was like 87.
85. Yeah. It's a little higher than 83.
Well, what's interesting is I actually heard them say that on NBC Sports Network last night. And yeah, I thought that was a lower number. If you notice, I've heard different numbers.
I know.
I've heard 85, I've heard 87, and they said 83 last night on NBC Sports Network, during the intermission show.
Because it's a silly stat to throw around, because the last time that they had this was the 80s. So, I mean, I don't understand. 82% in the NHL in five-game series, this is from our friend that texted us yesterday. The team that wins the first game wins 82% of the series.
Okay, 82. They said 82, not 83. Yeah, 82%. That's when I was like, huh. So there's another different number. I've heard 85, I've heard 87. Now it's gone down to 82%.
Yeah, but again, and I know you know this, okay, I know it's a stat, but they haven't played five-game series in the NHL since, 86? Was that the last time? So
let me ask you. So yesterday – all the teams that fell in game one, except for the Rangers, everybody bounced back and evened up their series. So what about today? So you've got the Panthers in an 0-1 hole to the Islanders. Do they even it up?
I don't think so. I just think the Islanders are the superior team in that series. We know their brand of hockey very well. Because we saw it for 17 years, but I think that, and I love that coaching matchup, Quinville and Trotz. I mean, they've seen each other quite a bit. I love that coaching matchup, but I just think the Islanders are the better team, and they'll go up 2-0. Maybe Florida gets game three, but I think that the Islanders go up 2-0.
The burning couches game. Brought this up with Stu Grimson yesterday. He got a chuckle out of that. If Toronto, they're down 0-1 in this series to Columbus, do they even it up today? The fact that game is at 3 o'clock this afternoon.
You know what? I don't think they do. I think Columbus wins this.
Wow. I mean, you picked it.
I did. I think Tortorella Hockey is going to win this. Torts just gets can get in people's heads, and I think that that's what's going to happen. I could be wrong, but if you think about it, burning couches if they lose the series, something's going to burn if they go down 0-2.
Oh, they will not be lacking material if they go down 0-2. Okay, and finally, the nightcap game, which does not start until 9:45 tonight. Does Vancouver bounce back after getting shut out, just like Toronto? And you said Toronto got shut out. They don't bounce back. Does Vancouver bounce back and even up the series against Minnesota?
Yeah, I think they do. I think they get this one tonight. That one, just if I can base anything off of game one, because I watched a good chunk of that one, I think that's going to end up being a fun series, a back-and-forth one. I think the Canucks tie it up tonight, though.
You think the Canucks tie it up, okay?
I do.
And then you've got the Rangers and Hurricanes. I think the Rangers get swept. I've been on record for saying that.
Do you
now
think it's over?
Oh, yeah, it's over. And I think Calgary comes back and takes game three. That's also tonight. Like, the Jets just can't. That's an inspirational win.
Yep.
Yesterday they respond. They don't have Scheifele. They don't have Line A. Look, they're not going to be able to hang around in this series. Yeah, it's going to catch up. If the Jets cannot get those guys back, I just don't see them winning this. And we all picked Winnipeg. Like, we're going to be wrong. Calgary's going to win the series.
Yeah, I agree. I think yesterday was just they knew they had to win one and, you know, fight for their teammate. So, so they played inspired hockey. But I think you're right. I think Calgary ties it up. So two games that are, you know, back-to-backs, had games yesterday, Flames, Jets, Hurricanes, Rangers. I mean, I agree with you. The Hurricanes closed it out tonight. That's a quick series.
Former quarterback, now with ESPN and SEC Network, Greg McElroy will join us to start the second hour of the program. Pierre McGuire at high noon, pregame at 12:30 for Game 2, Predators and Coyotes. Greg McElroy in the On Deck Circle, ESPN 102.5, The Game.